Well, good morning, everyone. I think we have representation from all four caucuses, and I think we'll undoubtedly have some latecomers to the meeting, but we'll get started for those who are on time. And I'm Senator Dave Kaler, co-chair, along with Representative C.D. Davidsmeyer, who's co-chair. Welcome. And well, first thing we'll do is we'll have Bree call the roll. Bree?
Senator Aquino, Senator Bailey,
here.
Representative Davidsmeyer,
here.
Senator DeWitt, Representative Ellick, Representative Grant, Representative Harper, Representative Hernandez,
here.
Senator Kaler,
here.
Representative Moeller, Senator Sims, Senator Severson.
All right, well, thank you very much. And we'll try to keep an eye on as people come in to add them to the roll. We have a very brief, we have a might not be brief as we get into the economic forecast and review, but it's a slim agenda. But it does have a lot of meat to it. But we'll first have our opening comments from our Executive Director, Clayton Plenke.
Director? Thank you, Co-Chair. Good morning, Commission members, and welcome to our annual Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability Revenue Meeting. My name is Clayton Plenke. I am the Executive Director of the Commission. I am joined at the table today by Ben Varner, our Senior Analyst and Economic Specialist at COGFA, and Eric Noggle, our Senior Revenue Analyst at COGFA. Ben and Eric will present our PowerPoint today, providing an overview of current economic conditions in the nation and in Illinois, and also to provide an update to our FY22 revenue forecast and our initial FY23 revenue estimate. Under our statutory mandate, COGFA is required to provide a revenue estimate by the third Wednesday in March. Our process has been a little different than normal this year. Although this is our official revenue meeting, we have provided some preliminary revenue estimates during testimony before the House Revenue and Finance Committee. These preliminary estimates were shared with Commission members prior to our testimony on February 24th. This information was shared earlier than usual to help Appropriations Committee to get an earlier start on their work since the General Assembly is scheduled to adjourn on April 8th this year. Today we will present our finalized estimates. There is no doubt that the job of revenue forecasting has been more complicated than usual over the last 2 years. The COVID-19 pandemic and the associated mitigation shutdowns resulted in drastic reductions in revenue receipts, at least in the short term. But the national and state economies proved resilient, bouncing back fueled by federal policies which spurred consumer spending on durable goods. There were also changes at the federal level that complicated year-over-year comparisons with the delays in implemented in filing deadlines. More recently, inflationary pressures, supply chain disruptions, and global events have added additional uncertainty. But as our forecasts show, FY22 is shaping up to be a very strong year. And GDP trends remain positive in FY23, even though actual receipts are forecast to decline compared to the better-than-expected FY22 totals. Our PowerPoint today is comprised of sections related to economic performance, economic forecasting, and the actual revenue projections. Ben will provide the overview of the economic sections of the PowerPoint, and Eric will follow with an overview of the revenue forecasting section. So at this time, I'd like to introduce Ben Varner, and he will lead the discussion for the part of our PowerPoint dealing with the economic variables and the economic forecasting.
Thank you, Clayton. As Clayton said, my name is Ben Varner. I'll be taking you through the economy. Right now, the main things we're looking at is our transverse from the pandemic, COVID pandemic, to more of an endemic situation, the inflation caused by the pandemic, and obviously, in the last week or two, the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. First slide shows real gross domestic product. This is one of the more broad-based data points that we look at. As you can see here, and this is basically made up of consumer spending business investment, government expenditures, and net exports. Consumer spending makes up about 70% of this data point. As you can see here, in the second quarter of 2020, we had a huge decline related to the initial outbreak of COVID. We bounced back partially in the third quarter of 2020, but once again, this was on a lower base, so we didn't bounce back all the way. Throughout the rest of 2020, we saw some growth with stronger growth in the first half of 2021. In the third quarter of 2021, we faltered to 2.3% due to the Delta variant of COVID and supply chain issues, which have become a major issue around the world in all economies. The fourth quarter, we sprang back to growth of 7.0%. However, once again, with the Omicron variant, we're expecting a slowdown once again in the first quarter of 2022. An aggregation of economic forecasts in February had a mean estimate for real GDP growth of 3.7% in 2022 and 2.5% for 2023. The next slide takes a look at the Purchasing Managers Index for the manufacturing sector. Basically, this shows the health of the manufacturing sector. Anything over a 50 means expansion, and below 50, a contraction. You're going to see a trend here with all these slides. Basically, we're going to see a big decline with the initial outbreak of the COVID and then a bounce back. Since May of 2020, the index has been indicating expansion after the initial months of contraction. The index hit its highest level since the early 1980s at 64.7 in March of 2021. Since then, we've seen some downward trend, but we are still at a high level. The manufacturing PMI for Chicago has shown similar decline in the initial stages and a large bounce back. What they're seeing in the manufacturing sector right now is continued strong demand, but supply chain issues and labor shortages continue to hamper the manufacturing sector. These issues are leading to order backlogs, higher prices, and low inventories. And this is going to be a similar situation in the service sector. On the next slide, you see basically a somewhat similar pattern. The services PMI covers the non-manufacturing sector, which is about 80% of GDP. And as you can see here, over the last decade, we have strong, steady growth with a really large decline as the pandemic hit, and then we bounced back. We saw a strong growth starting in the spring of last year. We reached an all-time high of 68.4 in November, but we slipped somewhat to 59.9 in January as the Omicron variant spread. We have one issue in these. There's an employment portion of this, and we actually might be seeing some contraction there. Hopefully that's just related to the Omicron variant, and then next month we'll see a bounce back, but it is an issue we are keeping an eye on. Slide 8 shows the Consumer Price Index, which is related to inflation seen by consumer households. Prior to the pandemic, CPI has been around 2%, especially when you take out food and energy, which are the two high volatile portions of the index. Once we got into the pandemic, we slowed the growth of prices, but we actually did not see price declines in general. In April of 2021, the CPI began to accelerate, reaching 7.5% in January. The core CPI has grown to 6.0%. Now, this inflation started in the energy sector and motor vehicles, both new and used, and has since then spread to all facets of the economy. CPI for Chicago has risen to 6.8%, which is a little bit behind the country as a whole, while core inflation remains more subdued at 4.8%. I'm expecting these things to continue to grow in the near future. Expectations prior to the Ukraine invasion were for inflation to continue to remain high in the near term, with a cooling off later in the year and into 2023. With the invasion of the Ukraine, oil is up over 30% since the invasion, and gas prices as of yesterday were up over 20% for the month, and coming in this morning I saw they're even higher. So this is a big issue. Luckily right now, it most likely is going to be a secondary cause, as the U.S., when we do exports and imports, isn't usually directly involved, and there is other places, but like issues like fertilizer for agriculture, is the ingredients for that come from that area. So there's going to be some issues there. We'll see later on. The next slide shows...
Can I ask a question on that?
Sure.
So energy prices are very volatile, I understand that, but so we see gasoline as a fuel for automobiles and trucks, diesel going up, natural gas has gone sky high. Are the two related, and do we see a continuation of natural gas to be affected by the war?
It potentially could. I mean, we have markets that are connected throughout, and you find substitutes. So, yes, when you see some changes in one energy source, it often leads to other increases, but it's somewhat complicated, and I really probably couldn't say exactly if you're going to see. It comes down somewhat to where your local sources are. The more local sources we have in the U.S., it's probably not going to be affected as much in Europe, as in like, because yeah. Russia's going to get most of its fuel goes to Europe, whereas ours, we don't import quite as much of that, so it's not quite as strong of a link, but it's a global market, so if you take a supply away somewhere else, there are going to be price raises other places to make up for it.
Yeah, I'm concerned about natural gas because even though heating season, you know, will soon be over, in terms of fertilizer and ethanol production, those are heavy natural gas users. So I just wonder if that's going to continue to be
I would
at a high level.
I think at least in the short term, you're going to see high prices all around.
Okay.
Supply will eventually be able to fix or, you know, counterbalance it. So high prices are going to lead to more people supplying it. But how quickly that can be turned on and off, we'll see. I don't know for sure. But definitely in the short term, higher prices are most likely going to occur.
Okay, thanks.
Slide 9 shows the producer's price index, whereas the consumer price index was what households were paying. The producer price index shows what producers are receiving in their goods from the first commercial transaction. Similar to the consumer price index, we've seen a big jump in the last 18 months. Overall, final demand sits at just under 10%. Whereas the goods portion has gone up over 13%, while the PPI for services is at 7.7%. And what you're seeing here is with the onset of COVID, we saw consumer spending patterns change. We went from not being able to go to movies or entertainment venues, we're spending more of our money on goods, and therefore the demand for goods went up and associated prices for them went up. We're expecting this to somewhat change in the future, assuming we get past COVID more and get it more in control and it becomes less of a factor. We're going to see more return to services and more tourism and entertainment venues. So hopefully that'll start coming down a little. Once again, the next slide, page 10, shows retail sales, and this is goods with some food services. And you can see what I was talking about here. You see a huge decline in the initial phase of the COVID pandemic, and then a jump way up above, way above trend. We have seen a little slowdown in the growth of that, and as I said, we expect that to continue as we get more service-oriented consumer spending. Slide 11 shows the 10-year treasury rate. This is a major interest rate related to home mortgages and considered an indicator of investor sentiment in the U.S. economy. Over the last 5 years, we've been at historically low rates, but with the onset of the pandemic, we saw them go very low, almost 0.5%. As we went through the pandemic, they've started to come out, but each time we see a new wave, they go back down. You can see here, we see some declines. After we almost got up to 1.75%, we went back down to about 1.25, and we've trended up. But each time there's a major event, like the Ukraine invasion, we saw about a quarter point drop since the invasion as of yesterday, and we stand about 1.74%. Expectations are this will start going up more with the Federal Open Market Committee starting to raise rates, but with the global events, how quickly they do it and how high they go might be changing a little where they were compared to like a month ago. LMA exports were on an uptick coming into 2018, then we slid going into 2020 with a big drop related to the initial phase of the pandemic. Since then, we've rebounded quite a bit, and expectations are for to continue growth as we are the fifth largest exporter in the U.S. As I said previously, in regards to exports, we really don't export a lot to Ukraine or Russia. Both imports and exports are less than 1% for Illinois. So this probably isn't going to affect us directly as much as it might where on the price side, where supplies to other countries affect global prices. So,
what about the supply chain? Does that affect pretty much industry across the board? In
yeah, it's gas and natural resources are the two. They sort of feed into probably Southeast Asia more and then products from there. So that's where you're going to see it, and that's where price changes is going to change. And as I said before, fertilizers are one area that definitely could be affected. But usually it's not directly to the U.S. It's sent to other countries, and then it's made into products there that come to the U.S. So it's not quite a direct link. So, slide 13 shows employment for the United States, and we track this through two surveys. The first is the Establishment Survey, which is part of the current Employment Statistics Survey from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Basically, this looks at payrolls from 144,000 different establishments at over 500,000 work sites. This one does not include the self-employed, it's just employees, and it does not include the ag sector. And then the other one is the household survey, which is part of the census's current population survey, which surveys 60,000 households each month, and it includes the self-employed, the ag sector, and basically anybody over the age of 16. Both of these are taken during the week of the 12th of each month, and as you can see, after a decline during the Great Recession, we had a long climb back up, consistent growth for about 8 years until we hit the pandemic. We peaked in February of 2022, and based on which survey you're looking at, we lost 22 to 26 million jobs by April. We saw a little loss in March, but then the big drop was in April. We almost immediately bounced back up partially. And then over the last half year or so, we've seen steady growth. Currently, we've mounted about 90 to 95% of the jobs, depending on the survey, but we remain 1 to 2 million jobs below where we were prior to the start of it. The next slide shows the same information for Illinois. While you see a similar pattern here, it's not quite as good. We took longer getting back our jobs from the Great Recession, saw the same big decline, but we didn't bounce back quite as much in the initial bounce back, and we haven't gained as much from then. Currently, we've gained about 70 to 75% of the jobs compared to 90 or 95%. So this is a pattern we've seen in the past. Illinois tends to lag behind the rest of the country when it comes to these the business cycle. Slide 15 shows the manufacturing employment in the state. We saw a big drop-off during the Great Recession, and then we saw a small bounce back, but we've been pretty steady in a pretty tight window between 560 and 580,000 for most of the last decade. We saw a drop-off in once the pandemic hit, and we've made up some of it, but we've only made a little less than half. So the manufacturing sector definitely has some room to grow there. Sure.
What would be an explanation why?
Can you use the microphone because it is being broadcast?
Sorry about that. Thank you. What would be the explanation with the lag of Illinois?
I don't have a great answer for that. I've seen some theories that it's related to the tourism and entertainment. Usually that's one of the things that takes a little longer to get back. You know, if you go into a recession, your disposable dollars, you don't start spending it on entertainment as much. You give up that vacation or that trip to Chicago, things like that. So that might be one of the reasons why we come out a little bit slower to return. And as you'll see, a similar situation with the unemployment rate when we get there. It takes a little longer for us to get back, and you'll see a gap. So 16 is the unemployment rate for both Illinois and the United States, and as I mentioned, Going into the Great Recession, we were pretty much synced up with the country. And then once the Great Recession hit, we've got formed a little gap. It took most of the last decade to get that gap to disappear. And we actually were lower than the U.S. Rate when right before the pandemic. Unfortunately, when the pandemic hit, that gap has reappeared. Currently, the rate for Illinois, the latest data, we were at 5.1% versus the country as a whole at 3.9% in December. Since then, the U.S. rate has fallen to 3.8%, so maybe the Illinois might be falling too once we get that data. The following page shows this basically the same pattern, a little clearer with the annual data between us, the Midwest, and the U.S. as a whole. And once again, you see the annual gap over the last decade that we closed basically in 2019, but has reappeared in 2021. Slide 18 shows average employment levels by subsector in Illinois. As you can see here, in 2020, we lost 7.1% of jobs, and then we rebounded with 1.6% growth in the preliminary in 2021. The bottom half of the table shows average weekly earnings, and you can see there in 2020 we actually grew 5.7%, which is strong growth, and then preliminary numbers are 5% in 2021. So while we lost jobs, we have seen wage growth. Next slide, we start going up our economic forecasts. The first forecast that we look at is an aggregation of economic forecasts we get from Consensus Economics. This is about 25 econometric firms, professional business association, academic institutions, and individual businesses. As you can see here, real GDP growth was expected at 3.7% and 2.5% in February. Disposable income is actually expected to decline this year, and that's related to the federal support we've seen during the pandemic. This will bounce back to 2.8% in 2023. Personal consumption was still pretty strong at 3.3% in 2022 and 2.4% in 2023. And then one of the big issues is consumer prices, which they have at 5.2% in 2022 and 2.6% in 2023, which is still higher than what we were at. We were more like 1.92% leading into it. So in the next year and a half, they're still expecting higher than regular inflation.
But they expect that to come down in 23.
Yes, but that's still, prior to the pandemic, we were more at like 1.9%, 2%. So that's still about a half point higher than it, which is probably going to be in the near future. We're probably going to go to a little higher rate than we've been at, because they had aimed for 2% for a long time, but they weren't getting it. It was more like 1.7, 1.8 each year, so they were undershooting it. So some people are expecting it to sort of overshoot in the opposite direction and be a little higher than long term. Slide 21.
Really quick, is that supply chain issue? I mean, consumer price. Is that supply chain issues? Is that
yes, it's a combination. Mostly. It's high demand with the federal support and people not spending a lot in the initial years of the pandemic. People have more money.
Yeah.
Well, when you have money, you want to spend it. So there's the demand for goods and services has increased. So we have high demand, but issues with the pandemic leading to like labor shortages. You're out of sick, so I can't make my that product to get to the next level. It just sort of bounces throughout the economy. So you've got trucker shortages. I mean, just labor is leading to material shortages, which is feeds into the next industry. So it's sort of compounding itself. So high demand with low supply causes inflation.
Yeah.
And hopefully as supply gets better, this will improve. One of the big issues is computer chips in Southeast Asia have had issues. I think there was a fire about a year and a half ago, and then just labor shortages in making the product. And that's led to shortage of vehicles. One of the biggest problem or inflation areas is new and used vehicles. No new used vehicles leading to higher prices in used vehicles. I did see this last month, we actually might see a contraction or a decline in the prices of used cars at auctions this month, so maybe we're starting to see a little of that, but who knows. But that's definitely one of the biggest issues, is the supply of materials and parts feeding into other industries. Excuse me.
And as we look at, you know, we talk about labor shortage and unemployment. It's not that there aren't enough people out there to do the jobs. People just haven't been returning, or I'm trying to...
It's a combination of people not returning and also where the jobs are versus where the people are. There is some mismatch of people looking for jobs that aren't in their area, whereas they might be in other areas. Mm-hmm. We've also had some issue of people retiring earlier. That usually we had some retirements. You usually see about 3 million people retire a year, and then a million of them come back the next year.
Yeah.
Well, during the pandemic, we haven't seen that return. It's starting to happen, but we haven't seen that. And also, with higher levels of federal support during the pandemic, as I said, people have money. They might not be as motivated to go back to work. Or one of the things we've seen is people quitting jobs for higher paying jobs.
Yes.
Whereas before they might have two jobs that don't pay quite as well. Well, now they might be able to support themselves on one better paying job. So the two jobs are still there, just that one person's not filling those both jobs. So
yeah. Yeah.
There's definitely labor issues that are leading to shortages of products further down the value chain.
Thank you.
Slide 21 shows the GDP forecast scenarios from IHS Market from February. They give us three scenarios, a baseline scenario that has a 50% chance of occurrence. This was expecting continued growth as we transition from pandemic to endemic. The first quarter was expected to be hampered by Omicron variant, but rebounds to 4.3% in the second quarter, and the second half of the year is expected to grow a little under 3%. Overall, real GDP was expected to grow at 2.9% in 2022 and 2.5% in 2023. A more pessimistic scenario with a 30% probability has the recovery stumbling as supply chains persist and the Omicron variant lingers. The pessimistic scenario forecasted actual contraction during the first quarter of 2022 and a lagging economy in the second and third quarters before turning to more normal growth at the end of 2022 and 2023. A final 20% likely optimistic scenario was the economy growing 4.7% in 2022 as the economy returns to normal with still more government stimulus and improving supply chain issues driving faster growth. Now, these scenarios were done before the invasion of Ukraine. There were inklings of the invasion already, so it was somewhat taken into, but we're expecting a decline of this GDP forecast once the new one comes out later this week. Friday, they released a report indicating it's going to be about 0.5% of GDP growth in the baseline. So that 2.9% is going to be more like 2.5% for this year. And this is one of the big issues with the invasion. It put a lot of unknowns into the forecast. Maybe we get this thing turned around and over in a couple weeks if Russia decides to get it, or this might drag us into a bigger war. Who knows? So the uncertainty definitely increased related to this. Slides 22 and 23 basically just give you some more information about the individual U.S. forecasts. As I said, the Ukraine invasion probably is going to tap down the baseline estimates by about 0.5%. Slide 24 is the Illinois forecast from February. As mentioned previously, we usually are a little slower going out of a recession. As you see here, the baseline forecast is more at 2.3%. in 2022 and 1.7% in 2023. Once again, that's a little lower than the U.S. as we lag out of the business cycle. Personal income, expected growth at 4.7% for 2022 and 4.3% in 2023, which is strong growth.
Really quick, you keep talking about the lag, and we've seen the lag over the years. I mean, it's something fairly normal. Do we also lag on the downside?
A little. Not quite as much. I don't know how to explain that quite well. We go in a little later, but the return is a little more out of sync. We go in pretty close to when the U.S. goes in, but we come out a little slower. So,
okay, thank you.
Now I'll turn it over to Eric Noggle to go through the general fund's revenue estimates for you.
All right, good morning. So I'll be looking at the fiscal year 22, looking at our revision for the revenues we expect for 22, as well as giving you our new numbers for fiscal year 23. I'll be starting on the slide on page 26. As you, most of you probably know, the fiscal year 22 budget was enacted last year with a revenue forecast of around $44.4 billion. That number comprised of $42.4 billion in base revenues, as well as $2 billion that we were expected to receive from the American Rescue Plan Act's reimbursement for essential government services. So again, a total budget of $44.4 billion. If you have been following our revenue briefings over the last during this fiscal year, you can see that revenues perform quite well. To the point that we really feel like that we need to have a significant revision of our fiscal year 22 revenue estimate. And we will be going over that here in the next couple slides. The bottom line is shown here at the bottom of page 26. We're going to be revising our base revenue estimate up to nearly $47 billion. We're going to be adopting the governor's office revised figure for the ARPA reimbursement. They have lowered their figure down from $2 billion to $1.5 billion. So with us adopting that, even with that $500 million reduction, we are going to be looking at a revision of an increase of $4.121 billion. And we'll get to that here in a second. On slide 27, you can see how revenues have performed so far this fiscal year. You can see in most of the months we've had very strong growth. The one exception that you'll see is in July. But the drop there, when you compare July compared to the previous fiscal year, that was expected. If you would recall, back in tax year 2020, they extended the tax deadline to July. And what that meant is a lot of the revenues that would normally have fallen into fiscal year 20 fell into 21. So the July that we have in fiscal year 22 is compared to an artificially high number in fiscal year 21. We expected that. The budget expected that kind of decline. And so the improvement that we have seen in revenues for this fiscal year are impressive, even with that being included. As you can see, in total, general funds, when you include federal funds, we're up $2.125 billion for the fiscal year through February. If you exclude the more volatile federal funds, that number would grow to $2.436 billion. One thing I want to keep in mind that I'll discuss here a little bit later is the strong January that we had of nearly $1.7 billion in increased revenues, and we'll talk about that here in a second. We go to slide 28. You can see where we're seeing the growth on a line-by-line basis. The personal income tax, again, at first glance, it doesn't seem that impressive, growing only 3.8%. But again, that's including the comparison compared to the year that had the final payment. And so a growth here of 3.8% is quite impressive, actually. Corporate income tax has had strong corporate profits. All year long, they've had extraordinary growth, increasing 52.5% on a gross basis. They're up $833 million on a net basis when you subtract out the non-general fund distributions. Sales tax revenue has definitely benefited from the stimulus money that we've received. Revenues have been especially strong this year, up $971 million on a gross basis or $761 million on a net basis. All other state sources are trailing last year's levels a little bit by a combined $67 million. Our overall transfers were up $444 million for the fiscal year, and our federal sources are down a little bit compared to a year ago. They're down $311 million, but when you can include that's what we consider the base federal source number, but if you include the $439 million in ARPA money that we have gotten, we're actually up $128 million for the fiscal year so far. So in total, you get to this $2.125 billion increase so far this fiscal year. So because of the strong growth that we have seen and because of what we expect to be in decent growth here at the remaining quarter of the fiscal year, we are going to be increasing our revenue estimate, as I mentioned before. On page 29, you can see a table showing how we break out this growth. Our personal income tax number, we are increasing it by nearly $1.7 billion, in large part because of the strong January. That big increase you saw in January is in large part because of the strong performance in personal income tax revenues. Corporate income tax net revenues, we're increasing our estimate by $1.234 billion, again because of the strong performance we've seen so far this fiscal year. Sales tax revenues, we're increasing our estimate by $926 million. All other state sources up 106, transfers in up 371, and federal source number, our base, we're increasing it by $317 million. Again, when we're adopting the lower number from the GOMB for the ARPA reimbursement, down $500 million, but in total, we have an increase in our estimate from the budget of $4.121 billion. So the question might be, how do we compare to G1B? Look at the table at the bottom there. Did you have a question?
Go ahead. I'll wait until you're done with this
part. GOMB's number is down below. You can see in November they had they increased their revenue estimate by $1.7 billion in November, and then did another $1.7 billion increase when they come out with their budget book. So they are at $47.8 billion. So they are $3.4 billion higher than what the original budget was. Again, we are closer to $4.1 billion, so we are higher than them. And you can see that difference on the next slide on page 30. One of the main differences between our numbers is that we had the luxury of being able to incorporate January strong growth. When the governor's office came out with their numbers, they really had only through December to come up with their revenue estimates. So we were able to see the strong January and also be able to see February's numbers. And so that's why you see on this line here that where we're have significant differences in the personal income tax line. We are $947 million above them. But I think if they would have been able to see that those numbers in their forecast, I think that they would be closer to us there. Our corporate income tax number, we are not as aggressive in the last 4 months, but still we're both seeing very strong growth, mainly because of what we've seen so far in corporate income tax, but we're just a little below them at $171 million. Sales tax revenues, again, both of us seeing very similar things. Again, we've been able to incorporate the actuals from January and February into our estimate. We're a little above them at $145 million. All other state sources were higher at $81 million. Transfers in a little below them at down $42 million from them. And our federal source base, we think it's going to be difficult looking at the last year's remainder to get to their federal source number. So we're a little below them of what they just came out with the budget book, so $266 million below them. Again, we're both adopting the same number for the ARPA reimbursement based on what they had come out with in the budget book. So the difference between our two estimates is $695 million. On page 31, all this is just more details behind that those figures. Yes, sir.
And just really, really quick, and all of this is all these pages are. I have a similar question. I also wanted to point out. I think it's interesting. I think historically we've seen GOMBI higher than COGFA, but over the last probably 2 or 3 years, we've seen COGFA at a higher revenue forecast than GOMBI. So I think GOMBI's actually doing a pretty job staying a little bit conservative, and there, like you said, there's a few things in there that they weren't able to capture. Yeah. When we look at personal income tax, corporate income tax specifically, how much do we have any idea how much of that is the influx of federal dollars in, you know, and bear with me because the last 2 years have kind of all run together.
Yeah.
But with like PPP for corporate taxes, the higher unemployment rate for personal income taxes, and then obviously on the sales tax side, we're looking at when people, as you said, people weren't going out to eat, they weren't going to movies, so they weren't paying the service side tax, they were paying taxes on goods. So we saw an increase. As people move back into the service sector, are we going to see a drop in that?
Yeah, your points are very well taken, and I think you're absolutely right. The stimulus money has no doubt helped to put more money into the economy, and businesses have been able to benefit from that, whether it's directly given to them or through to the individuals who are able to spend more money. You're seeing that in the corporate profits that we're seeing, and the increase in corporate income tax revenue is just really phenomenal, what we've seen so far. So there's no doubt that that has worked. The question that you had was the last thing you asked about. The sales tax, oh yeah, we're going to be talking about that for fiscal year 23, that we do think there's going to be a little bit of a slowdown in sales tax revenues because of this transfer into the more of the service sector. So we'll talk about that shortly. Good. All right, so page 31, is just really a summary, a line-by-line look at what we talked about on page 30. So we'll just keep on going into fiscal year 23 on page 32. Obviously, the trends are very good right now. In one way, you would think that it's going to mean you continue that trend going into fiscal year 23. The problem is there are a lot of unknowns, a lot of uncertainties. It's going to cause us to create a very conservative look into fiscal year 23. The bottom line difference between our 22 and 23 numbers is a reduction of nearly $2.2 billion. Now, we want to make sure you point out $1.5 billion of that is because we're not expecting, using GOMB's figures, they are not expecting to use any ARPA reimbursement in fiscal year 23. So that's zero. We had $1.5 billion in fiscal year 22. That's one of the big significant differences between our 22 and 23 estimates. However, even with that, we are assuming a $671 million drop in our base general funds revenues. The reasons have to do with the uncertainties, as I mentioned before. Number one, COVID-19, is there going to be another variant? Obviously, we've seen what the immediate impact of a variant can have on the economy. We'd like to say there's not going to be one, but it would be difficult for us to just assume that. And so we're going to have to take a conservative look because of that in itself. Number two, the inflation impact that Ben has talked about. What kind of impact is that going to have if prices continue to escalate? What's that going to do to corporations and the spending that people can do? They can only spend so much money, and there's going to be less products to spend. We felt like we need to be conservative in fiscal year 23 because of that. Obviously, the geopolitical environment, what's going to happen to Russia and Ukraine, a lot of unknowns there. Number four, the absence of federal stimulus. We're not going to have as much stimulus money that's going to do what you said, to put into the economy. And because of that, there's going to be differences there, especially into sales tax. So I'm going to look at each of these categories and where we're going to see some changes. For personal income tax, we are increasing our estimate by $291 million, but that is a very modest increase. And we'll talk about that. That's only a little over a 1% increase is what we're expecting for personal income tax going into 23. And I'll talk about that a little bit further in a few minutes. Corporate income tax revenues, we're going to see a reduction of around $170 million. We just don't think that the corporate profits can stay at the same levels that we've seen. We've felt like we need to lower our expectations there. Sales tax revenues, again, because of reduced purchasing power, because of the stuff that we've talked about with inflation pressures, the removal of the federal stimulus money, the child care tax credit payments will no longer be going on into fiscal year 23, likely. The shift into the non-taxable service sector is going to be an issue for sales taxes. And also, you got to remember that if you recall, Public Act 10132 takes transfer sales tax revenues from motor fuel. There's going to be more of that taken away from the general funds and moved into road fund. We estimate that to be around $115 million in fiscal year 23. Could be a little higher. So that's money you will not have there. So because of that, all those things together, we're going to be reduced. We expect sales tax revenues to be $94 million less in 23 than it was in 22. Transfers in, or all other state sources, we're seeing it $57 million lower. Transfers in, just a little lower at $76 million. And then the federal source number, we are forecasting it to fall $565 million. Now, that's due to anticipated lower reimbursable spending, but it's also due to the public health emergency that allowed us to have an enhanced 6.2% matching rate. That's supposed to be going away. We are under the assumption that that will not be used, that enhanced matching rate, for fiscal year 23. I think GOMB is assuming that maybe we'll get one more quarter of that enhanced matching rate. So there's a small difference between what our assumption is and GOMB, and that's why you'll see that we've pretty much taken GOMB's number minus 90 million, and that's just the value of that difference between using that enhanced matching rate for that first quarter.
On the sales tax side, 94 million really isn't that much of a decrease with all the things that you've mentioned that will be changing, less money coming in,
yeah,
people returning to services, fuel,
yeah,
sales tax, and all those things.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, it would be a big change from the trends that we've seen. I mean, sales tax has been growing quite a bit higher than that in,
yeah,
fiscal year 22. So it's a slowdown. I think our base is around 0.1% growth or something like that into 23. And then you have the amounts going to go to the road fund. That's where you have the decline because of that transfer that we're using into this.
So we're still going to see
it'd be
the
a slight positive
sales
growth.
Tax. It's,
yeah,
just not going to be as much.
The growth
in spending.
Sorry. IHS forecast was at like 0.2% for good growth.
Yeah.
Because even with increased prices, you're going to see the still sales. You're just not going to get as much.
Yeah.
So we do have just a little growth in actual sales for goods, but then the motor fuel portion knocks it back down. So.
Okay. Thank you.
On page 33, this is just a line-by-line detail of what I just presented for above, again, getting to that $2.171 billion difference.
I have a question. If we can go back, you said that there's going to be some health matching that may terminate? Or
yeah, there's this enhanced matching rate that they're doing to get reimbursable spending. That is supposed to go away, this enhanced part of that. The timing of when that...
Do you know specifically what it is, what those health...
It was the increased Medicare. It was the increased Medicaid match.
It is match.
That was given for that, just that period of time.
Thank you.
Okay. So we will go on to page 34. And this looks at how our numbers compare to GOMB's numbers that they just released in the budget book. You can see the bottom line is we're only a difference of $484 million from where GOMB is. One of the differences you see is personal income tax, and this is interesting because we're at $349 million above them. Much of that is just simply due because where we started our base at. If you remember in 22, we were a much higher number than them. Our growth for fiscal year 23 is only around 1.3%. Their growth is more of like around 4%. And so we have much less growth. We're much more conservative in that value. But because of our higher base, our number for fiscal year 23 remains $349 million above them. Corporate income tax...
Let me ask you a question on that.
Sure.
I think that the equation of labor into what it might do in the future is one of the volatilities as well. I mean, we've got, you know, the pandemic, we've got the war, I think. So we're looking at the fact that we have high unemployment compared to where we have been, even higher than the United States. But yet we have higher income. And so that seems to me to say that we've got inflation going on and we have labor shortages. I mean, every group that comes into, I think all of us, the first thing they say is, we can't find workers. We need more money.
Yeah.
Why do we have high unemployment and yet we have such shortages all across the board?
You want to touch that one?
Our unemployment actually is pretty good. Right? I mean, 5% is higher than the nation, but compared to where we were at, I mean, we were at like 16% when we first hit. So unemployment has been going down. I think one of the big issues, as I said before, is people's household balance sheets are good, so they might not feel that they need to work. Or with increases in wages, you don't need that second job. So some of that is, and you're competing at a much higher level, like Amazon. They're, you know, $17, $18 to begin with at a warehouse worker compared to where we were at with the minimum wage is at 12%. $12, if you're only offering $12 and I can get $17 down the road. So, but yes, there's definitely some issues related to supply. Now, Some of that maybe have to do with, or you know, the population demographics of the state. We've seen declines there. Immigration hasn't been quite as high as it's been in the past. So there's multiple reasons why we're seeing both. That's one of the reasons we're seeing increases in wages is people can't find workers, so they have to pay more. So that might be actually leading to less jobs being filled because, as I said, I don't need two jobs or three jobs anymore. I can get away with one. So
that's going to be one of the things we track in the future is to how. I mean, I think that's as big an issue as some of the other things that create volatility in our economy is where we go. Because, you know, as an example, I know hospitals are now paying over $200 an hour for nurses, traveling nurses.
Definitely.
I mean, I don't know of any fast food place. They're looking at $17 an hour. I mean, everything is pushed up.
That's definitely true. We've definitely seen wage inflation over the last year or two.
It is a definite
issue in the economy.
So we will keep track of that because I think that's an important
that's
factor.
That's one of the things we do track that by industry.
Thank you.
So continuing on page 34, again, our corporate income tax number is a little less than them here, but we're seeing very similar conclusion that there probably will be a drop into fiscal year 23. We're $89 million less than GOMB in their figure. Sales tax revenues, again, both of us seeing a decline going, just a slight decline, where we are $178 million above them, mainly because of where they came in on fiscal year 22 and how we compared to them there. All other state sources were a little higher at $67 million, transfers in $69 million higher, and then we get to that $90 million difference that I discussed earlier in federal sources. So the bottom line is we are $484 million above them. While that is obviously a significant amount of money, when you're talking about a $46 billion budget, that's only a difference of around 1%. So it's really not that significant of amount of revenue, the difference between the two sources. Page 35 is just, a breakdown of more details line by line of where our differences lie, again, getting to that $484 million difference. The final two pages are just simply historical revenues, charts, and tables showing where we've been in actuals over the last several fiscal years and comparing that to our new estimates. We're happy to answer any more questions that you may have.
Yeah, thank you. I guess the one that kind of jumps out at me is the corporate income tax, where we've seen really strong growth that I don't think was anticipated when we went into the unknown here. I'm wondering why we're more conservative in your figures than the governor's office. Do you not think that supply chain issues will begin to work themselves out and that the labor shortage will become much less a factor
as we go into fiscal year 23?
Right.
Yeah. A lot of that has to just where we think fiscal year 22 is going to fall. Our reduction in our base revenues is actually, we're at minus 3.8% in our effective drop. They're actually at minus 5.4%. So they're actually a little more conservative of us in terms of growth. We just happen to be at a little lower base to start with for 22. There's a lot of questions for corporate income tax revenues and where they're going to fall. Things have been so good that 23 is going to be compared to a very, very strong year. So it's a very difficult thing to estimate.
I think there's also a lag between what we're seeing, because you're talking about tax year 22 or 21 versus, so we're sort of, there's sort of a lag there of the actual economy.
Comment?
I just had a quick question.
Go ahead, Dave.
On that too. On the corporate side, with the loss of all the federal money, substantial wage increases that they have to pay artificially higher than what the real cost or the worthiness of that job is at, the increased supply chain costs. Increased health care costs because of the inflationary factor, and then the massive looming, $5 billion unemployment hit, which is talking about $300 or $400 per employee cost to those businesses, that's all going to impact that corporate bottom line. And so I think being more conservative clearly makes more sense because it's these companies are going to all be struggling, even though they're still surviving, the cost of producing that good, and how much can they pass on in higher costs before either that purchase no longer is going to occur or people are going to purchase from out-of-state sources. So I think looking at that massive cliff that we're heading into may be as big, and I think being conservative makes a lot of sense because I just don't know how some of these companies are going to survive. As we've even talked about the healthcare side, as nursing homes are closing because they can't pay those kinds of wages. So this artificially high wages that have been created is going to certainly increase that corporate profitability bottom line. So I'm glad you're trying to be a little bit more conservative because I think we're that would clearly be an indicator.
Yeah, your point's well taken. Yeah.
Any other questions? I guess I feel kind of schizophrenic. I'm kind of euphoric on one hand, and yet when I see the volatility that exists, it's like, what am I, nuts?
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting year, but yeah. I'm amazed that we have come out of where we thought we would be at this time when the pandemic hit, doing so well. I mean, I've run into some companies that have barely kept the doors open. I've ran into others that say we've had our best year ever, and it's like, go figure. I guess just depends on what kind of a niche market you have. Sidi,
do we have any idea? Senator Severson mentioned the unemployment backlog that we owe to the federal government. Do we have an idea the impact that it would have if we paid that off now compared to pushing that off on corporations, as well as probably lower unemployment payments, lower benefits to employees? And obviously on the benefit side, it would be a decreased cost to the state, which is not necessarily a good thing in this situation. Do we have any idea paying that versus not paying that? And I'm not trying to get political.
You want to answer that?
I guess that's more on the spending side, and that's more of a political decision of how you guys want to handle that. I don't think we have any numbers at hand that would put number to what you're talking about there, but I think that'd be more of the political decisions made.
The only difference would be on the corporate, on the business profitability side. If they are, if they're laying out $5 billion more, that's clearly, that's all non-taxable, so that's that clearly would reduce the corporate tax side because there'd be significantly less net revenue for them to pay taxes. So that, I guess maybe the question, the better question would be is, in your estimates, knowing that, again, just being political, I don't see any scenario where this administration is going to pay any of that unemployment, which means that's going to be all left to the businesses to pay next year. And so did we estimate that when you're estimating your corporate tax, if they are in fact paying that money, is that part of your reduced corporate tax revenue that's going to be paid?
I would say we don't have a certain value that's set aside just for that. But I will say that we have a very conservative outlook in our revenues, which would be totally different than what the growth that we've seen in fiscal year 22. So it's going to be just a dramatic shift from what we're seeing right now to 23. It's just a big change that we think we've incorporated a lot of, you know, conservative outlook to it. Maybe we'll need to do a different change to that later on. But right now, we feel like we can endure some of that, absorb some of that fall off if there's downward pressure because of that kind of situation that you're talking about.
And do we know how much on the all the federal money on the personal income tax, we saw that huge increase, how much that was attributable to the federal huge give back to everybody?
There is definitely a good chunk of that, but I don't have anything that would show exactly how much revenue they've got and how much income tax revenues we've got because of that stimulus money. Yeah.
Okay.
We have a question from Representative Davis Meyer, then Representative Elk.
Just really quick, as we look at the corporate income, we're talking $5 billion that we owe to the federal government that will have to come from corporations. Obviously, that's not going to be a dollar-for-dollar decrease in the taxes that we see, but certainly it would have a large impact.
My question would relate to the ARPA reimbursement in your 23 estimate. You and Gombe have agreed $0 ARPA reimbursement. But, one of the concerns with the ARPA money is that we're spending it in ways that are making some permanent changes to, state operations. So, I expect that has happened, but with that $0 being brought in, is that really realistic that we're not going to spend any of it on essential government services in the next year?
Yeah, again, we don't look at spending with what we do. We look at more of the revenue side. So I guess I can't really speak for that, where they should spend it and when they're going to spend that money.
Yeah. We'll probably be spending quite a few weeks talking about all the spending. Any other questions? And welcome, Representative. We are just about done with our meeting. Do you have any questions, anybody? Seeing none. Representative Harper to the roll. And Clayton, you wanted me to mention that we do have a business meeting on March 22nd, and we'll do an overview and review of the contracts for the administration of the State Employees Group Health Insurance Program. We will be taking votes at that meeting, so we will need a quorum. Any other? Same time? Same place. Any other announcements? Clayton?
I would just note for that meeting, our plan would be to do that the same way we did it last year, where we will have the commission members in the meeting room. We'll have the director of CMS to offer testimony, and then we'll have a Zoom component so that we don't have to bring all the various health insurance vendors into the meeting, and they will do their component through the Zoom link, and then we'll have our votes on the contracts that we do for the renewals.
Do we have a big screen then we'll all be able to see them on, or what?
I believe last year we just did it with individual. Everybody had an individual tablet.
Okay, yeah.
So we'll have the earpieces tablet.
Yeah, I understand that. All right. Well, seeing no further business, then the meeting stands adjourned.